This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler will dust it off, new son, Shifley, shot, he scores! For Lonnie, slap shot, he scores! Patrick Lonnie with an absolute laser beam!
Back out in front of shot, they score!
Jack Roslevic, Jackie on the spot! Now Morrissey moved in, let a shot go, he scores! Sitter out in front of shot, they score! Nikolai Ehlers from Patrick Laine. Maroon out in front of the shot. What a stop by Hellebuck. Absolutely robbed Andre Palat.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 12th of December. 1 month less, 1 day away from allegedly the start of the 2021 season. So that will be an exciting development if that ends up coming to fruition. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, a pleasure to see you on this Saturday morning. First and foremost, a happy Hanukkah to you both as we celebrate the Festival of Lights, night number 3 coming up later on tonight. Good to see you, gentlemen.
Yeah, happy Hanukkah, boys. I don't know about you, but I've had, I think, like 30 latkes, potato latkes.
Yeah, but you had that like last week before Hanukkah started.
Yeah, exactly. But and, you know, for those, you know, who aren't familiar with latkes and they haven't had them at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve, you know, they're basically potato pancakes. And my wife Naomi and I made some. And I'm not sure if you guys have made any this year, but it's unbelievable to me how much moisture there are in potatoes. If you've ever, you know, worked with potatoes or made these latkes, like, it's honestly impossible, you know, to dry them out. But anyways, you know, it's a tradition, you know, we like to do, right? So, always a good time of year. And probably the best thing this year is that I get to give, you know, my kids, a present every night of the week. So that's pretty awesome. You know, considering everything that's going on, you know, things like this, you know, whether you're celebrating on, you know, Zoom or whatever, you know, it's always a good time of year, and we got Christmas coming up in a couple of weeks, so, you know, better days are ahead for sure.
That's a good attitude there, Mr. Ginsberg. I'm willing to scrap the rest of the show plan, Dave, and listen to Ezzy tell us about other fruits and vegetables that are very moist, but that's a separate issue, I think, altogether.
I've been sitting here since Ezzy dropped the moisture in potatoes and just trying to think about what that means for the world.
You know what I'm talking about, though, Dave. It's unbelievable.
Well, like, I mean, I don't
I was using a dish towel, and Naomi and I had, like, paper towels. Like, the water just keeps coming out of those potatoes.
Guys, if you walk yourself over to my kitchen right now, you'll see that pretty much everything, the original plastic is on everything. So that space doesn't get used very often.
Also, potatoes are a very versatile. I'm also a quarter Irish, right? My dad's Jewish. I'm a quarter Irish. So that's where I get my love for the potatoes.
And that's also where you get your love for corned beef. Is that how that works?
And whiskey.
Good to know. Anything else you want to say on that, or are you good on that front?
I'm good.
Okay, Dave, good morning to you.
Hello.
That's it? You can't follow up on that?
How am I supposed to follow, Ezzy?
It's impossible. I really should start with you.
You really should.
It's not how do you follow me.
It's why would you want to follow
me? Yeah, like, I really think you should just come to me. I'll do a, you know, a 30-second spiel, and then, boom, Big Daddy gets the opportunity
He's got some gold to usually start with on a Saturday morning. Let's get started with, of course, your Winnipeg Jets, as we mentioned, you know, next month. Ideally, maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed.
It still seems like definitely, you know, unrealistic at this point for January 13th, right? Because if you think about it, and players start coming over after Christmas, I mean, they're going to have to quarantine until, what, January 10th or something like that. But the NHL's insistent that, you know, the season's going to start on January 13th.
I think what they have on the sketch of the calendar for the teams that made the return to play, I think that they would figure most people would travel back to... let's assume there's a one-week quarantine for those who are coming from overseas or coming back from the United States.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Press broke it down as to what... if you're coming from Western Canada, Eastern Canada, the States, or overseas.
Right. Western Canada, there's no quarantine at all, so there's no issue. Certainly, some guys are already here, guys like Wheeler and Sammy Niku have been here, you know, for a lot of the time. You know, if you're coming from east of, what's it, Terrace Bay, Ontario, you know, there is still a quarantine. But I would be surprised if it doesn't become at least maybe a one-week quarantine instead of the full 2 weeks, so that guys could travel to Winnipeg theoretically on, let's say, Boxing Day, If they traveled on Boxing Day to Winnipeg, mm-hmm. that means that they would be able to start training camp on January the 3rd, assuming it's a one-week quarantine.
Right.
And that's what I think most of them are trying to figure out. I think the NHL and the players have basically said, look, we want to, you know, you guys want to have Christmas with your family at home and then travel here. And I'm not saying if it's right or if it's wrong. I mean, regarding the quarantine, obviously, I mean, there shouldn't be an exception for hockey players, but, you know, our priorities have already been determined to be out of whack for a while now. So, you know, that it seems like that's going to be the case. They can travel on Boxing Day or right around there, land in Winnipeg and be ready for a training camp to start on January 3rd. I mean, it goes to show you that the exhibition games, you know, are obviously just nonsense in a regular normal season mm-hmm. because, oh, lo and behold, they're going to manage to play without any exhibition games, and I don't think anybody's, you know, too terribly upset about missing out on these high-quality, fake games.
Exactly. You only need really, like, what, one, two, maybe three exhibition games?
I mean, you need that.
Yeah, you might
play a couple intra-squad games.
Exactly. No, you can make an argument that there shouldn't be any, right? So, I mean, we've been saying that for years, and, you know, usually you have, what, seven or eight exhibition games? So,
seven,
you know, and I was exaggerating, guys. Like, obviously, you know, the NHL is pretty set and firm. It's either going to be January 13th or it's going to be shortly after. Like, it's not going to be February 1st. So maybe they push it, you know, a day or two, maybe a week. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying it's going to be cutting it close, right? Because, like you said, there's a handful of players in Winnipeg right now. We don't know exactly how many because you hear that, you know, NHL teams, and I imagine the Jets are one of those teams, are telling their players to start coming back, right? But it'll just be very interesting. It's going to be a season like no other. We just saw, you know, a Stanley Cup playoffs like no other, but, you know, it's going to be a very quick training camp. And, you know, I feel really sorry for those other seven teams. They were promised, I think, what, a week or 10 mm-hmm. days or 2 weeks mm-hmm. of training camp, and they get 3 days? Like, that's a joke.
They're supposed to start on New Year's Eve before everyone else starts
What are you going to accomplish? And, you know, Drew Doughty has been sitting at home waiting to get back on the ice. Obviously, he's been practicing, but, you know, he's been off for, you know, 9 months. What is an extra 3 days going to do for Drew Doughty, right?
Nothing at all at that point in time. So let's get into the Winnipeg Jets. And I asked you guys, you know, to come prepared to the show with sort of your top five power rankings of Jets players, Jets coaches, Jets management, whomever you like, that are under the most pressure for the start of the 2021 season. You know, who are the Jets most relying on for success? Who's under the most pressure at the start of the season? So, Ezzy, let's start with you. Your top spot, your number one Jets player, coach, management member, who's under the most pressure to start the season?
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth, you know, with, you know, who it's tough to rank. I think I have a pretty good idea who is in that top five. But, you know, for me, I'm going to go with Patrick Laine. And, you know, he's clearly in the last year of his contract. We all know that. And we know all of the rumors and everything that's, you know, been going around in the media. You know, not so much lately, but a couple of months ago, and, you know, we talked about it on this show, and it was talked about on the station, but, you know, there's always that possibility that this is Patrick Laine's last year in Winnipeg, but it's definitely the last year of his contract, so he's going to be under a lot of pressure, because he has that big day coming up, guys. Like, his next contract is not going to be a two-year contract. You know that he's going to want, you know, that long-term security. He's going to, you know, look for that, you know, big contract of his career. So, for me, Patrick Laine, you know, has to be number one. The other contender for me was going to be Connor Hellebuck. And for me, there's no, you know, debating, you know, Hellebuck's ability. Like, not only did he win the Vezina, he's been one of the top goalies in the league for 3 years now. So for me, you know, he's under pressure because he's got to follow that up, right? Like, he's coming off of a career year. He's coming off a year in which he was, you know, head and shoulders above, you know, other goalies in the league. So Connor Hellebuck, to me, is number two. And for me, three has to be Paul Maurice. And because we're doing players and coaches, that's what you ask
players,
for.
Players, coaches, management.
Management. And, you know, I think I would even put, you know, I'd probably put Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice, you know, tied for number three, because I think it's a similar situation in which, you know, the Jets had a disappointing finish, even though, you know, we've documented, you know, all the, you know, change that went on in the defense and everything like that, injuries, but there's a lot of pressure on this team, I think, early, and it's going to be a unique all-Canadian division. There's going to be a lot of pressure to get out to an early start, and there's going to be a lot of pressure, I think, to go on a nice playoff run. Like, I think the Jets are probably the second or third best Canadian team.
We'll talk about that. That's a segment later on in the show, but, I mean, you can keep expanding on your,
well,
on your thoughts.
I mean, I, when we did this kind of exercise, I said, I think on paper, Toronto's the most talented team, but after that, I think it's completely wide open, right? Like, I think some people might think, you know, Vancouver's the second best team. Some people might even think Edmonton is the second best team. And, you know, I could hear an argument that the Jets are the second best team. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure, not only to make the playoffs, but I think there's going to be pressure to do something, get out of the first round. I mean, that's the thing, guys. Like, the Jets haven't got out of the first round except for, you know, that the 1 year, mm-hmm. right? So you forget that, you know, that 2018 run was nice, but that was a while ago, right?
And it's also an aberration rather than the rule. Everyone thought that after 2018, this was a team that was going to continue to rise, and instead what's happened is they've declined and plateaued. So, mm-hmm. I mean, certainly, to your point, Ezzy, about Paul Maurice and about Kevin Cheveldayoff being, you know, under a lot of pressure this year, you know, you have him ranked number three, and I want Dave in here in a second to give me his, at least start with your top three, Dave.
Sure.
I mean, that, you know, that speaks to the, you know, I think the entire attitude and maybe the atmosphere surrounding this team, that a couple of years ago, this was a team that was, the sky was the limit. And instead, what has happened is they've hit the ceiling now of the first round, and how do they break through that ceiling again?
Right, and, you know, last year they obviously, you know, they lose Scheifele, they lose Laine, they lose Appleton. If you have those guys, there's a good chance that you get into the round of 16, right? Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. a couple of years ago against St. Louis, you know, that series is tied. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not like we're saying, you know, the Jets have been, you know, a below-average team. I mean, the Jets could have easily gone to the second round a couple of years ago, and, you know, who knows what would have happened, you know, if they made it to the first round or the, you know, the round of Sweet 16. But the point is, like, they have to start showing some success. They have to go past the second round, I think. I mean, getting just to the first round or the second round is not going to cut it when you have all of these excellent players in the primes of their career. So, again, it's not just pressure on the coach. It's not just pressure on Kevin Cheveldayoff. There's a lot of pressure on everybody here, you know. As soon as that puck drops in mid-January, there's going to be a lot of pressure. And like we talked about, the training camp is going to go really quickly. Like,
yeah, well, like, it's 10 days.
It's 10 days. It's going to go very quickly. And then you're going to be right in the middle of regular season games. And mm-hmm. even though you're going to play some teams that, you know, like Ottawa and, you know, some other teams that aren't necessarily, you know, la creme de la creme, I mean, it's still a very strong division.
It's a sprint, Dave. It's a 56-game sprint, the yep. likes of which we haven't seen ever in the NHL, especially because, to Ezzy's point,
it'll be similar to the lockout.
Yeah, except the lockout, you still played other teams. I mean, this is.
Oh, I hear.
I mean,
you.
This
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
You know, if familiarity breeds contempt, there's going to be there's going to be no shortage of contempt this year.
Well, Steve Simmons wrote about that in the Toronto Sun, and
right.
I thought it was an excellent article talking about how Canadian fans are going to be lucky this year because you're just going to see bloodbaths and you're going to see really the rivalries.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the Jets haven't really been able to kind of create rivalries within the Canadian division, mm-hmm. Within the Canadian teams, really, because they're in the Central.
Yeah, you play Calgary and Vancouver and Edmonton maybe three times a year.
So unless you're a holdover from the Jets 1.0 and you still have that Smythe bloodlust, mm-hmm. the reality is you don't have that sort of same thing. So I think, yeah, that's definitely going to be something different that we see this year.
So your power rankings are the most pressure. As he started with Patrick Laine and then he went to Connor Hellebuck, and I'm going to say almost for very different reasons. Laine, because of all of the noise that was surrounding him this offseason, a lot of it which, you know, fairly or unfairly was out there. Hellebuck, because the team relies so heavily on him, mm-hmm. and then Maurice and Cheveldayoff, because, you know, they've been here, you know, for so many years now, and they've sort of plateaued with their results. So who are your, let's start with your top three, I suppose.
Well, I'm going to go with Josh Morrissey. I think Josh Morrissey absolutely has got a ton of pressure on his shoulders right now. I mean, he spoke about it. He's a very honest guy. He won't give you a fake answer when you ask him about his season. He'll give you a fairly honest assessment. And he said he wasn't good enough. And he's in the first year now of his 7-year contract. He's the highest paid defenseman on the Winnipeg Jets. And I just think that there's going to be a ton of pressure on him to really step up. And I think him having that full season with DeMelo, I think will really stabilize him for this season. So I expect him to be able to handle the pressure, but I still think that doesn't mean that there's not going to be a ton of pressure on him because of the Jets defense and its thinness. And so a lot of that means it falls on Morrissey's shoulders. And I think he'll be able to handle it, but I still think that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a ton of pressure on him. I'd also use Connor Hellebuck as my number two selection, just simply because, not that I, again, he's another guy I have faith that he can handle the pressure, but there's no question that the Jets relied more heavily on Connor Hellebuck than any other player last year. And you, while again, like, I think Billy Hainola and Dylan Sandberger, potentially one of the two, will be able to step in and make that defensive core better. Again, you still think that Connor Hellebuck is going to have to be otherworldly again this season. So to me, that puts a ton of pressure on Connor Hellebuck because, again, you know, he's a guy who is the man in Winnipeg.
If he has a top five season or a top seven season as opposed to a number one season, what does that mean for the Jets' prospects?
No.
I mean, to your point, saying that how important he is to
that's
the
right.
team.
You just can't have Connor Hellebuck slide. That's what it comes down to. I mean, again, you can have him slide to five.
Yeah.
If he's a top five goaltender in the NHL, the Jets are still going to be in a pretty good place. I'm just saying you can't have a real significant decrease, which I don't anticipate anyway. So I'm just, again, we're talking about pressure, not guys who have, and then you can't help but look at the bench boss, Paul Maurice. I mean, to me, here's a guy, sure, he's got the contract extension, which gives him a little bit of safety, a little bit of latitude, but I still think, you know, last year, and I'm inclined to use Kevin Cheveldayoff as well because I think he'd be almost like my 3-4 of Maurice and Cheveldayoff. Last year, they got a pass because of all that went on with the injuries and Byfuglien and the defense core being blown up. But that was last year. And so you got a pass for last year. You know, and a lot of people didn't want to give him a pass, but the reality was that gave them some room. You've lost that room now. And the reality is to what Ezzy just said a few minutes ago, this is a Jets defensive core that is in its prime. And you really need to take advantage of that. And to me, if you fail to do so, if you fail to keep Patrick Laine in this mix, if you fail to get something, appropriate for a guy like Patrick Laine, then you failed. And I think that's why the pressure is on these guys. Because to your point, you've had one extraordinarily successful run to the Western Conference Finals, but this is a team that many, many folks around the NHL were picking to be Stanley Cup contenders for years to come. And, you know, you're not seeing that. So if you're not seeing that, why is that?
I think another guy, you know, if Paul Maurice is 3 for me and Chevy's 4, just like, you know, Dave had them 3 and 4, for me, Blake Wheeler is number 5. And, you know, Wheeler is one of the most consistent Jets. We know that. He's, you know, a point per game player or, you know, just below a point per game player. But I think there's a good chance that you're going to see, you know, Patrick Laine on the top line. And if that means that Blake Wheeler is moving down to the second line, and you could also see, you know, Blake Wheeler possibly being used differently on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a transitional year for Wheeler as well, because, I mean, even though Wheeler has been one of their most consistent players since the Jets came over from Atlanta, I mean, let's be honest, Wheeler did not have a good playoffs for the Jets or qualification round, right? Like, when Mark Scheifele goes down, Patrick Laine goes down, who do you expect to step up? Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler, Nikolaj Ehlers. Nikolaj Ehlers was great. I mean, Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor were not very good in that qualification round versus Calgary, right? So, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, Wheeler's on the decline or anything like that, even though...
Well, he's getting older.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
This is where, you know, you've paid him a lot of money and his production is likely going to start to decline. Now, you hope that it doesn't decline significantly, or you hope that you can put off that decline for another year or another 2 years. But, I mean, just logically, you know, they say that, you know, mother time is always wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, father time always wins. You can't beat father time. This is where you're going to start seeing that. The Jets hope it doesn't start for another couple seasons. But if it starts this year, then boy, is that a salary albatross on their books right now, Dave?
Yeah. And
last word for you, Dave.
I was just going to say quickly, my fifth guy would be Adam Lowry. I think there's a ton of pressure. He's in the final year of his deal. I mean, if the Jets used him in a fourth line center role, I think it'd be a little bit less pressure. But because they use him in that third line center role, he's got to produce more than he has. And I think that's just, it's going to be significant a season for Adam Lowry because, again, you have to be able to produce. You can't have a third checking line anymore. You need to be able to score. And so that's going to be incumbent on him to be able to start producing this season.
This is our Illegal Curve question of the day, so we want to hear from you on this. Send us your comments at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can text them to us, 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Give us your top five Jets under the most pressure for the start of the 2021 season and why. We'll read some of your comments throughout the course of the show. When we come back, Cole Perfetti's made Team Canada, no surprise. Gets a lot of great praise from Team Canada's head coach. We'll play that praise for you, and we'll talk about Team Canada and the Jets involved in the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championship. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think he got better every game. I think tonight was he's a smart kid. He wants to learn. He wants to please you. He wants to do what he has to do, what's demand from coaches. And he's a fun kid to coach, so I really like the way he played.
That's Team Canada head coach Andre Tirigny talking about Cole Perfetti of the Winnipeg Jets. No real surprise at all. Perfetti did make Team Canada, so he'll be participating in the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships. Gets underway in a couple weeks' time, of course, in the bubble in Edmonton. At least we hope it's going to get underway in a couple weeks' time. Time will tell. They've certainly had their COVID issues in Team Canada, and all the other countries as well have had some COVID issues. So it'll be, you know, like everything else in 2020, a tournament unlike any other. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
And a little bit of breaking news. Earlier today, Team Finland, Team Russia announced their rosters, and about 20 minutes ago, Team USA announced their rosters. And one interesting note, we had Brad Schlossman on last week, Drew, and Brad Berry, a UND coach, on a couple of weeks ago. Jake Sanderson, no surprise, he did make the team.
Yes, of course, no surprise there at all. And speaking of Team Finland, a couple of Winnipeg Jets are going to be playing on Team Finland. Henry Nikkanen is going to be on Team Finland, and that's not a surprise. And nobody really, nobody thinks that Henry Nikkanen is going to be a player for the Winnipeg Jets this upcoming season. But Ville Heinola is going to play for Team Finland as well, which certainly leads to some questions as to what his role will eventually be for the Winnipeg Jets, if there's a role for Heinola on the Winnipeg Jets. We know that the World Juniors are scheduled to go until January the 6th. That is when the gold medal game is, which means that if Finland were to be in the gold medal game, Heinola would miss at least the opening of Winnipeg Jets training camp scheduled right now for the 3rd of January.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? We were talking about it off air. Like in a normal year, if the NHL season had started in October, I mean, there was a good chance that Heinola could have been a member of the Jets.
Right.
And he wouldn't have been loaned for the World Juniors, you don't think, right? Because Heinola played last year, and you got to think that he's going to be a top pairing defenseman for Finland and play a very key role. Dave's been covering it for IllegalCurve.com. He's been having a fantastic year in Finland, racking up the assists, right? So I think he's got 14 assists or something like that, right? So, you know, Heinola is going to play a big role, but yeah, Drew, it's, you know, it's interesting because Bob McKenzie tweeted this out last night in regards to Nick Robertson of the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs said, you know, Robertson's not going to play for Team USA, who we just mentioned. And, you know, Alexis Lafreniere, we know, is not going to play. Capo Caco, Jack Hughes. So those are some pretty big names. And I respect that decision because these guys are under NHL contracts. These teams like the Devils and the Rangers who's the other team I mentioned, and the Leafs, I mean, you got to think that, you know, there's always that in the back of their mind, they're thinking, you know, we want these guys to be ready for training camp, and there's always the chance that one of these guys gets injured. So I have no problem with that decision.
It'll be interesting for the Jets because, I mean, I'm sure they're going to be happy and excited that Heinola gets some game experience and he gets some game action. Yeah. Although he's had a lot of game action over in Finland. I mean, it's not like he hasn't been playing.
They played 19 games.
Yeah, so he's been playing some, you know, decent amount of hockey so far. So you have to wonder how much of the, you know, how eager they were to lend Heinola to Team Finland for the upcoming World Juniors. And, you know, obviously they're holding their breath regarding any injuries, and you never know when an injury is going to hit.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you can't live your life in fear, but it's certainly something that I'm sure the Jets organization will be, a little reticent about towards the start of the World Juniors, certainly.
Well, of course, and the truth is, like, look what happened last year, right? We were talking about it off air, but David Gustafsson was playing for Team Sweden, and he got injured when they won bronze, and he ended up, he was assigned to the Moose, but he didn't actually play for the Moose for a while because he was dealing with an injury. So there's that factor for sure. And Ville Heinola had been playing. He played 19 games in the league. It was very good. 13 assists. I was wrong. It was not. But anyways, so close. But he's been very good. But Liga got paused on December 2nd, and they weren't going to play till the 19th. And actually, that was some news yesterday that broke, was that Christian Vesalainen and Juno Luoto were both released by their Finnish teams to come back to Winnipeg for training camp.
For training camp.
So they'll have to obviously isolate, and they obviously got the release. So the only guy who's still there is Santeri Virtanen, and he'll be staying, obviously, in restarting with the Liga, and he plays for Saipei, and they're playing starting in a week today. So he'll be back playing. He'll be the only Jets player, prospects, or I should say, who's still playing in Liga.
So Perfetti, going back to the opening comments that we played there, you know, high praise, as I mentioned, from the head coach of Team Canada, Andre Tourigny, saying how smart of a player he is, you know, how teachable he is. And I think these are all, you know, and this is exactly what we heard about Perfetti, really, since the Jets drafted him and all offseason long, is, you know, one of the, he was an OHL, I forget the exact terminology,
Scholastic player
of the year, you know, a guy who's all, you know, a hockey nerd, always trying to learn. So, you know, I think this tournament might even be a bit of a coming out party. He's not going to get, you know, he's not the number one line for Team Canada, and he's not likely to play up the middle. He's likely to play on the wing, but he's a guy who's already, you know, opening some eyes and turning some heads. And with a performance at the World Juniors, he might even be able to launch himself even further. Assuming, I mean, Team Canada, everyone assumes they're going to be there in the gold medal game because they usually are. You know, so that would be January 6th, and then he would have to come to Winnipeg, you know, maybe get a couple skates under his belt at training camp, and who knows if he makes the Jets opening day roster for a season scheduled to start on the 13th of January, as he.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, first line really doesn't matter at the international level, right? I mean, some would argue that, you know, these days, first line, second line doesn't even matter, third line doesn't matter at the NHL level, but because we've seen this, whether it's at the Olympic level, World Junior level, you know, U18, I mean, Cole Perfetti is going to play on the wing, but year after year, guys, specifically at this tournament, right? Last year, it was Akil Thomas that scored the big goal for Team Canada, right? But you go back, you know, to the early 90s when we were young whippersnappers, John Slaney scoring that goal for Team Canada, right? Like year after year, you know, third pairing defensemen, fourth line guys score big goals, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Cole Perfetti, yeah, he might be a third liner or a fourth liner, but this is a guy that, you know, was a 10th overall pick that could have gone much higher, right?
And he's also got the trust of the coach. I mean, exactly. That's what you hear in those comments.
Well, it's high praise, but that's all you hear about with Cole Perfetti, right? Like, that's why a lot of scouts had him ranked fourth or fifth. Like, fourth or fifth for his age group in the world is incredible, right? Like, that's the talent you're talking about. And, you know, we talked about it. The Jets haven't had a prospect like this since Patrick Laine in 2016, and then, you know, maybe Nikolai Ehlers before him in 2014. Like, he's in that same skill level. Again, you don't want to hype him up too much because he's only 18 years old, but, you know, many people and the scouts, amateur scouts, know what they're talking about. I mean, they think he's going to be a very productive NHL player. I mean, we don't know, you know, what that means. Does that mean 80 points? Does that mean 100 points? I mean, the point is, you know, he's a very good player, and you got to think that he's just happy that he made Team Canada, and he's not that upset. He knows the depth that they have, you know, up the middle. He's okay to play on the wing. So, yeah, I expect him to play, you know, a key role, even if it's in the bottom six. So, you know, great to see him make the team. You know, great to see him get the praise from the coaching staff. And, you know, it's going to be really exciting for Jets fans to watch him because, let's be honest, we haven't had a lot of hockey to watch these days. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this tournament happens because earlier this week, it wasn't looking too promising, you know, with basically the entire Swedish coaching staff and some players, and then you also had some German players. So at this point, you know, it's looking pretty good, and we'll cross our fingers and hope that, you know, this tournament happens 2 weeks from now.
Last word on Perfetti goes more back to the head coach of Team Canada, Andre Tourigny, and when we come back after the break, Paul Edmonds is going to join us. So let's hear from Tourigny. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Was really good on the power play, but even at 5-on-5, he does a lot of things. I think early in the camp, he needed to embrace the concept and get better defensively, which he did. His commitment is really good right now. I really like the way he plays. So, Perf, we like you said, we moved him on different line about every game. So he showed he can adjust and he's pretty good.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Our IC question of the day entering the 2021 season. Give us your top five power rankings of the Jets players, management, coaches, whomever you think is under the most pressure. We want to hear from you. Tweet at us, text us your answers. We'll read them throughout the course of the show. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Our good friend Paul Edmonds joins us on the line now. Paulie, good morning. Happy holidays to you. How are you?
Oh, well, shalom, my friends, and happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
How's the outdoor rink coming along, buddy?
Well, like I kind of mentioned a couple of times this week, I mean, we had those plus 6 degree temperatures, and that's not really good for making ice, as you guys probably can understand. Simple weather and, yes, and science, but it's cooled down a little bit, so I got some water on it the other night. Kids skated yesterday, and they'll be out there again today. We had a little skiff of snow last night. That's always kind of good because it takes some of the impurities out of the ice, because I use a well to feed my water and to use, you know, I mean, I'm on kind of a pasture grass too, so I don't have a liner, so I have some other things I have to kind of deal with, mineral content and things like that, so the snow always kind of works. It's always good when you can use nature to kind of help you out, but otherwise it's pretty good. I installed the south wall this year so they can go back and forth and hammer pucks to either end, and we don't have them flying into the night in the snowbank, and then, you know, the black lab picks them up in the spring and chews them. So we're going to save on pucks this year too, guys.
It sounds like everything's coming up Edmonds over there on the estate to Edmonds with the ring. So that's nice to hear, Paulie. Obviously brought you on, talk a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets. You know, a month out, hopefully, fingers crossed, from the start of the NHL regular season. And our question of the day, and I'm not sure if you heard about it, is, of course, you know, sort of the power rankings of which Jets players, Jets coaches, Jets management are under the most pressure for this upcoming season. So I'll throw that question over to you. If you had to rank your top three, you know, where's the pressure lie the most entering this 2021 season?
Well, I think one of the guys is going to be Connor Hellebuyck, and that's not because he has to prove anything else. I just think there's going to be pressure on Connor to consistently have another good year, because that's what the Jets will require for them to be successful. So kind of starts in goal for me. And will it be another Vezina type season for him? I'm not saying that it has to be, but he needs to backstop the Winnipeg Jets with the consistency that we saw last year, because they're going to be bringing in some new players, I believe, on the blue line. And not only that, but also maybe injecting some youth there as well, so from the system. So from that standpoint, there's going to be a learning curve, and there's going to be a little bit of growing, I think, from the back end. But there's also going to be some consistency from the standpoint that you've got Dylan DeMello more than just for the 10 games and the other five games that he played after that, the 15 in total, along with Josh Morrissey. And you've got Neil Pionk, who's going to be in his second year with the Winnipeg Jets, third overall in the National Hockey League. So, you know, there's some consistency that way, and there's some good skill that way with Josh Morrissey kind of leading the charge on the defensive core. But Derek Forbort comes in. I mean, Dylan Sandberg, we're expecting to see him. Maybe Billy Hainala and or Sammy Niku pushes in permanently. So your goaltender, I think, is going to be the number one guy. The other guy, I think, is going to be Patrick Laine. I mean, there was a lot of talk about the Jets maybe trying to move him and him maybe not being that responsive to what's going on here. But at the end of the day, I mean, if he's still here, he's going to have to produce, because I'm sure that he would like to cash in that $8.5, $9, $9.5 million contract at the end of this year, because this is a contract year for him after this expiring deal is done on a 2-year bridge. So that would be the second guy that I would look for to say that he needs to produce. And not only that, but I think he's got to find his way back onto the power play with more goals and with more ability to hit the net. I mean, he kind of got over a little bit away from the area that he was shooting from, and I didn't really like that. You guys could probably break that down. He wasn't necessarily on the dot. He was kind of shifting over toward the boards. I thought he was kind of giving himself a bit of a bad angle on that power play. So he would be a guy that I would say that has to kind of step up for the Winnipeg Jets, for reasons for him personally and for the team. And then I think beyond that, you know, I mean, there's probably going to be a little bit of heat on the coaching staff from the standpoint that they want to get the power play overall a lot better than it had been. And the penalty kill, for sure, that's probably the number one area that they need to improve on. So, you know, those are three areas, Connor Hellebuck, for obvious reasons, just to make sure that Winnipeg feels that they can make a mistake and they know the goaltender is going to bail them out. Isolating one of their superstars, I think Patrick Laine has to have a bigger year than he had last year. I mean, he didn't disappoint last year, but if you're looking for that kind of contract that I think he is, then you got to get back to that 40-goal range, and you need to be a weapon on the power play. And then I just think that overall the Winnipeg Jets want to play a little bit better defensively within their system, and I think they want to improve their special team so that rests in the coaching staff, not just one man. I mean, they spread it out. Paul will always tell you, that being Paul Maurice, that ultimately the whole coaching scheme rests with him, but he has great input from his associate coach in Jamie Compon and the other coaches around them. So as a staff, I think that they want to improve on a few areas. So that would be 1, 2, and 3 for me, guys.
So, Paulie, if the season does end up starting right around, you know, January 13th, that obviously means that training camp is going to start in early January. And, you know, oftentimes, not only on our show, but, you know, on all shows on our station, you know, we talk about individual players and individual maybe battles that are going to happen for, you know, third or fourth line roles or, you know, that third, you know, D pairing. But looking at it from a macro level, we know that this is going to be a very short training camp, and we know this is going to be a very unique season with the Jets being in the all-Canadian division. What are you kind of looking for towards, you know, from a macro level about Jets training camp? Because you still have a lot of players who aren't in Winnipeg. They're going to have to come together really quickly. So what are you kind of, you know, looking forward to?
Well, I think number one, you're going to look, your top line is going to remain the same, right? You're going to have Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler. And then you're looking to see on that second line if Paul Stastny comes in and finds that magic that he had for a short period of time with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine. And if he does, I think that 1-2 punch becomes very good for the Winnipeg Jets and formidable against teams that are going to try to match up against them. If it doesn't, and I mean that's a small sample size, I know, then you're probably going to be looking at some other areas to try to move into the middle there. But I think that would be a focal point for me in looking to see how Paul Stastny fits in with those two Euros, right? So beyond that, I mean, you're probably going to have your Kopp and Lowry pairing and situation again. Now, who's going to be with them? Is it a Jansen Harkins? Is it Mason Appleton? I think Jansen Harkins fits in nicely there. But then also at the same time, Cole Perfetti, who makes the World Juniors, gets an opportunity over the holidays here to play for Canada. All eyes will be on him. And I expect that he's going to come in and use that opportunity to play live hockey coming up in a short period of time to try to make an impression for the Winnipeg Jets. Is he going to make the team? Not sure. And if he's going to make the team, it's probably going to be on the wing to start, which is where he's going to probably start with Quinton Byfield on the World Junior team. And that's kind of going to be a good situation for him because he has played a lot of wing. He prefers to play center, but I think he's going to find a spot first and foremost if he does crack the Winnipeg Jets on the wing to start until he gets a little bit more comfortable and they can move him into the middle. So the other part of that is now Nate Thompson assumes that fourth line center role, and that's probably with Matthew Perreault. So I'll be looking to see how Nate Thompson fits in here. He's an admirer of the way Paul Maurice coaches his team. He's been around. He's a veteran guy. So that's a pretty easy slot for the Winnipeg Jets to just kind of put him in. They've always liked that sort of fourth line veteran presence. So as we've gone through that, that will be some of the areas that I look, Cole Perfetti, Paul Stastny, and then just who kind of fits in with that third line with Kopp and Lowry. And maybe if it's a Jansen Harkins, do we see a little bit more offense come out of that third line? So those are kinds of things that I'm looking for. And then on the blue line, I think you're looking to see who might step up, as I mentioned in my first answer here, and assume a spot. I think Beaulieu and Pullman are probably going to be your third pairing. It's going to be Forbort and Pionk, and then you've got DeMello and Morrissey. But who's going to really push in as the next guy there? And that's an opportunity for us to really see Dylan Sandberg, Ville Heinola, who impressed last year during training camp. So a lot of questions there as well. I think some fighting and some competition for jobs, which is always great. But here's the thing, and you mentioned it, Ezra, and that is that you're just not going to have a lot of time to let this kind of unfold organically. So if you're going to make an impression, it's got to be quick. You have to sort of expedite that, and there won't be a whole lot of time for mixing and matching and experimentation, because you're going to want to hit the ground running for that 56-game season. And the fact that it is a shorter season doesn't allow you for a lot of time to make some mistakes along the way, lose some games, and say, okay, well, we're going to pick up our socks here after October's done, and we'll find our stride in November and get toward the holidays here and make a stride that way in getting toward the playoffs. I don't think that there's an allowance for that in the way that the season's going to be shaking down. So some quick thoughts on training camp. From the standpoint that what I'll be watching for, and I think most will be, but there won't be a lot of time, as I mentioned, for a lot of questions to be answered if you find some gray area.
You know, Paulie, there's a lot of uncertainty with the AHL season, but right now they're on tap to start February 5th, and the way it looks is it could just be a four-team Canadian division with Laval and Belleville and Toronto and the Moose. So the question is, do you think that this, though, situation puts the Jets at an advantage? Because, you know, you mentioned, you know, some of the guys you didn't just mention were David Gustafson, Christian Vesalainen, and obviously they, in this training camp, could fight their way, you know, onto the roster. But if they don't, is there an advantage to the Jets organization for this Canadian division in the AHL to be a place for their prospects to continue to develop rather than sitting in the press box watching games? These guys are playing games in the AHL and getting experience versus, like I said, watching and practicing.
Well, the easy answer, David, is yes. I think that it's important in whatever sort of system and scheme that they're going to have in terms of that 14 sort of small AHL component north of the border. But it will be important to play games, meaningful games from that standpoint. The NHL is talking, guys, about going to 26 on a roster up from 23, which is usual. So you're expanding it by three. Plus you're going to have a four-man taxi squad. So it allows your NHL roster essentially to be 30 players. Well, that's not really going to be great for the development of some of these young guys that you're talking about. And I think Christian Vesalainen and some of these others, David Gustafson, as you talked about, Dave, need a place to play and not sitting in the press box. That's not going to help their development. Older guys are able to kind of, guys that know where they are in their careers, those guys are probably more destined for press box duty from that standpoint, because they're a little bit more adept at coming into the lineup, coming out of the lineup, coming into the lineup, coming out of the lineup. When you're a younger guy and you don't exactly know where you fit in the organization, or at least you're trying to move up in the organization, sitting in the press box doesn't do anything for you. So, yeah, it's important to answer your question. It's important to have that American League component in whatever shape that it is. And if it's four teams, if it's more, if they're only playing twice a week and sort of a college schedule, then that's still going to be advantageous for those players that you're trying to develop. They need to play meaningful games. Most of hockey hasn't since last March. So I think that that component, coupled with Winnipeg Jets, is going to be important for the organization overall. And, you know, I mean, look at last night. I think it was opening night in the East Coast Hockey League, if I'm not mistaken. So while there's a number of teams that aren't competing this year in that and have taken basically a year abeyance because of COVID, it's still important for those players to get on the ice. And the East Coast Hockey League felt that last night. So they opened up in a number of different markets for their season. So it's good to see that hockey's returning, but it will be, I think, a true benefit to the Winnipeg Jets organization overall by having their American League team play in whatever shortened schedule that is, with a shortened sort of little division, if you will, but still meaningful games and a place for their players to play that are still developing and trying to move up on the depth chart.
Paul Edmonds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul, I appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Make sure the rink keeps on working, and happy holidays to you and yours if we don't speak before the Christmas season.
Guys, right
buddy.
Back at you. Take care. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Paulie. Yep. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Paulie.
When we come back, David had a nice conversation with Jonathan Kovacevic, 2017 third-round pick of the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the impact of that four-team AHL division, AHL Canadian division, much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Here's Jansen Harkins driving wide. He's got
got a forward on him, going to the net, tries to steer it on goal, wraps around, can't quite get around in time. He's got Kovacevic wide open, and he scores! Johnny Kovacevic, overtime winner! And the Moose end it just 18 seconds into the extra frame.
Our buddy Mitch Peacock with the call going back into the archives. Going way back, Johnny Kovacevic's first game with the Manitoba Moose, scoring an OT winner back in 2018-19.
Mitch Peacock sounds a lot like Daniel Fink.
Was that Finker?
That was Fink.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. My apologies to both Dan and Mitch there. They sound similar. Or is it just me? Maybe I'm just all clogged
up. Well, it'd be very problematic if it was Mitch because Johnny Kovacevic played his first year last year. And it was, I think, was a play-by-play.
No,
Well, technically, that's true. Actually,
that is the one game he played.
Yeah, right. That's the
first game.
Thank
you. That is Mitch Peacock.
No. That was still Fink.
That was still Fink?
Yeah. It was still Fink. You're right. I got the year wrong, but it was still Fink.
Hold on. Okay. Was that Johnny Kovacevic, though, scoring the goal?
Yes.
That we know.
It was an OT winner against the Chicago Wolves. Yeah. I went deep into the archives.
It was his first game. He signed an ATO in the 2018-19 season. And
he played one game and he got a goal and an assist and an OT winner was the goal against the Chicago Wolves.
Yeah.
I get half credit. Do I get half credit?
No. You get half credit.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyways,
you got the player right.
The reason why we're playing a Johnny Kovacevic clip is Dave had a nice chat with him earlier this week. Yeah. That's available on illegalcurve.com, of course, if you want to check it out. And we want to talk to Dave about your impressions of that. Before I do that, Dave, I want to mention that this segment of the show, of course, brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, you know, Johnny Kovacevic is a guy who a lot of Jets fans probably don't necessarily think up at the top of their list when it comes to, you know, Jets prospects.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a third-round pick, so he's not, you know, a seventh-round pick. It was a few years ago, but obviously there's a development curve when you're talking about a third-round pick. You know, what were the main takeaways you got from your conversation with him, Dave?
Well, we spoke for 45 minutes, so there were a lot of takeaways.
I don't think you've spoken to anybody for 45 minutes in the last number of years.
Yeah, he's a very well-spoken guy, a young man. And he, you know, I thought what was interesting and it's, is that he understood, and he's not that young. I mean, he's young in his pro career, but he, you know, went to college. So he went the college route, so he's a little bit older than he's not 18. He's not wide-eyed. But the thing I thought was interesting is that to begin the year, he was in a rotation with Luke Green and Leon Gavanke, and he was really only playing once every third game. And I, you know, again, as a young player, you want to play. You don't want to be sitting in the press box. You want watching games. But he, you know, he spoke about, and I asked him. I said, "What was probably one of your most memorable things in your first year as a pro?" And he said, "Just that idea of, you know, waiting for your opportunity because it's going to come." And when you get it, you have to be ready for it. And I thought it showed a maturity that, you know, rather than like, again, guys can sulk, guys can be upset. You know, I should be playing over this guy. I'm better than this guy. I'm a prospect. Why aren't you playing me? He didn't do that. He bided his time, kept to practicing. And, you know, again, he finally understood when their opportunity presented itself, you're going to get it and you're going to have to take it. And he said that was the one thing. He said, coming from a college experience where you only play, you know, a few games, like, no, you know, we play 30 games, but, you know, it's not quite the schedule. You know, the likelihood of change is so much less significant. He goes, but, you know, with the Jets having any sort of situational change, that impacts the Moose. And with the Moose, they could have a situational change, you know, including, like, i.e. an injury. That makes things change. So that was one of the takeaways, was just that maturity of understanding when that opportunity presented itself, take it. And you know, the other thing you took away was how he picks up those details of the game from the coaching staff. And he talked about the difference between a great coaching staff and a good coaching staff. Because the reality is, most coaching staffs are, you know, there for a reason. You know, they're good enough that they've made it to that level. And again, we talk about the AHL is still pretty good hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that one of the things he learns from head coach Pascal Vincent and assistant coach Eric Dubois were just their details of the game. And he was saying, if you were in our video sessions, you'd understand. And I interrupted him and I actually said, well, I'm happy to join those, but I'm not so sure the coaching staff would like it. But he just said that he picks up so many details from them within the video structure. And that's one of the things that people have to realize about all the learning that goes on in the AHL. And I know people get it, but people think that you've played one year pro, get out of the AHL. That's not the way it works, especially with defensemen. So I think that's one of the things. And then the other thing is that just in terms of that flexibility of learning to play with other guys. Like, he played on the both the right, the left side. He played with, like, Logan Stanley. He played with Nelson Noje. He played with Cam Schilling. Played with Jimmy Olney. He played with a lot of different guys. And he just talked about what he learned from those veterans, the ability to communicate and how to be assertive. And he said that the difference between a good communicator and someone who doesn't is maybe half a second. But in hockey, that's all it takes to turn a good play into a bad play.
You don't have a half a second to pause and that's think right. about it. It has to be almost instinctual more than anything else at that point in your career. Ezzy, go ahead.
One thing that I thought was really, well, the whole article was really good, Dave. The one thing I thought was particularly interesting, in addition to him talking about, you know, learning under, you know, Pascal Vincent and Eric Dubois, is what he was saying about staying motivated, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've mentioned that many times, like the players in North America that have been, you know, sitting around, not sitting around, obviously, because these guys are, you know, working out and skating on their own, but they haven't been playing in games. That's what I mean, right? So they haven't been playing in games for, what, 8 months now?
Yeah.
So it was interesting to hear him really open up about how, you know, you have to be motivated by, you know, your next workout. You have to be motivated by, you know, your next practice session, because you know that games aren't coming until, you know, February at the earliest. So he was, you know, admitting that, you know, some of the players overseas have an advantage on them, but he's saying that, you know, he's been keeping himself motivated just by, you know, doing workouts on Zoom with one of his trainers, I think from college, right, he said. So that was really interesting. And then also just, you know, talking about how he kind of, you know, liked the fact that he was playing with a bunch of different defensemen, as you mentioned, like Logan Stanley, Nelson Noje, and I think Leon Govanke was the other one. Cam Schilling. Yeah. So, you know, he really opened up, and, you know, I've never got a chance to, you know, talk to him, but just hearing about him from you, you know, he sounds like, you know, a very, you know, first off, just a, you know, a good guy, but also, you know, a guy that, you know, who knows, a couple of years from now.
He's got big size. He's got good size. I mean, 6'5", 220, 230.
And keep in mind, guys, the Jets used a third round pick on him.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. He's not a scrub.
Right. Well, and even if he was a sixth round pick, it wouldn't matter. But, like, this isn't a guy that, you know, you can just say is going to be a career AHLer.
Right.
Like, this is a guy who's only 23 years old, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so he has a very bright future. He obviously played the, you know, the, I think it was 4 years at Merrimack or 3 years, at Merrimack. So, you know, he obviously spent, you know, the extra few years than some other players, you know, like, you know, the Kyle Connors and the Jacob Trubas at Michigan. So, you know, he's one of those almost Dave blue chip prospects, like a guy that, you know, you don't expect to play for the Jets next year.
Right.
But you're thinking, you know, maybe he could be a third pairing guy, you know, a couple of years down the road. So he's a very interesting prospect to watch.
Last word, Dave?
The one thing I wanted to just piggyback onto what Ezzy was just talking about was that idea of the motivation and the idea that, you know, I'd spoken to David Gustafson, I've spoken to CJCs, but I spoke to him earlier. And to me, it was, I really want to talk to Johnny Kovacevic because I want to talk to someone who hasn't had the opportunity to play. Now, when I talked to CJ, it wasn't that long ago since it played, but the difference was with Johnny, it's been almost 9 months since he last played a game. Whereas David Gustafson, who I spoke to last week, he was playing still in Sweden. So to me, I was very interested to talk to a prospect who has had that long layoff to really see what their mindset would be versus a guy who is getting to play, you know, 2-3 games a week. And so I think it'll be very interesting. We'll tweet out the link to the article now so you can have a read of it if you haven't had it already.
It's a great article. It's available on illegalcurve.com. We'll send out a link, as Dave just mentioned. You can take a look at it. When we come back, John Mattis is going to join us. He's the national hockey writer for The Score. They did a really interesting 4-part series on rethinking the NHL. Some ideas, some revolutionary, some that maybe are more likely than others, that might, you know, modernize or introduce new concepts to the game of hockey. We'll talk to John up next about that series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, including Dave's interview that we just referenced with Johnny Kovacevic, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From The Score, we're pleased to welcome their national hockey writer, John Mattis, back to the show. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm good. How are things in Winnipeg these days?
Well, you know, COVID rates could be better, but I think that's basically true most everywhere in Canada. Yeah. But you know, we're keeping on, keeping on, as the old expression goes, trying to make the best out of what is certainly not an ideal situation. How about things with you?
About the same. Yeah, just trying to grind through here, looking out the window right now, seeing some rain instead of snow. So I guess you take your your positive developments as they come. So.
That's a good attitude to have. That's, we all need to try and keep our spirits up any which way possible in this unprecedented 2020. That's certainly the case, John. Full kudos to you and the team at The Score, which for a great four-part series, and that's why we brought you on to talk about it. Rethinking the NHL. And I think, you know, this is a great opportunity to introduce concepts like this because, well, frankly, there's no hockey right now and we're sort of entering into a bit of an unprecedented season. So why not sort of think outside the box? And this piece, these articles certainly do that. And I want to start with part one, which is called the Gold Plan, which is sort of rethinking how the NHL determines the NHL draft order. No longer is it done by a lottery. No longer is it done by, you know, the team that finishes last has, you know, the best odds, quote unquote, to win the first overall pick. Instead, it's done by when you are eliminated from playoff contention, the team that then racks up the most number of points would be the team that gets the first overall pick. I hope I've done a decent job summarizing it. What are your thoughts on this plan, and do you think that there's, you know, a hope in hell of ever seeing the NHL introduce it or ever seeing the NHL think outside the box that I think they're currently, I'll use the word, trapped inside of?
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, kind of part of the reason why we did this series, and people can find it at thescore.com or in their app, is because I feel like the NHL thinks pretty small time in the grand scheme of things. If you look over to the NBA or to the NFL or even Major League Baseball to some extent, it seems like the NHL is a lot more traditional, you know, a lot less willing to really jump out and do something different and shake things up and change the way that they've always done it. So in regard to the Gold Plan, which is named after Adam Gold, the guy who championed it back in 2012 at the Sloan Analytics Conference, and that's how it kind of gained prominence. The Gold Plan is pretty simple when you break it all down. And this is the one, idea that we threw out there out of the four that I think actually makes the most sense and is, the least gimmicky, I'll say. Basically it eliminates the draft lottery. It discourages tanking, and the top picks in the draft are given to the top performing non-playoff teams. So you would quote unquote start the clock on, say, the Detroit Red Wings of last year, once they got eliminated from playoff contention. And instead of their fans cheering for more losses to get better draft lottery odds, they would be cheering for wins because that would give them a higher standing in the rankings for getting the first overall pick. So at the end of the day, as Adam Gold told me, you know, the value of a win should always be more than the value of a loss. And right now, as the NHL is presently set up with the draft lottery and with the way that they decide their draft order, the value of a loss down the stretch for non-playoff teams is higher than the value of a win. Like, it's simple. So that's what it would be solving. And, you know, there is some pushback in terms of, oh, you lose the draft lottery, that's a nice event. Oh, you know, you lose these shocking turn of events, which is, you know, the New York Rangers winning the first overall pick in 2020 with, I think it was 2.5% odds. So, you know, you certainly have to acknowledge that. But I think if you're thinking big picture about the NHL and keeping things fair and, you know, I guess promoting the right values, as cheesy as that sounds, I think the Gold Plan makes a lot of sense. And a guy like Shane Doan, who played on some bad Arizona teams, he's been behind this idea for a few years now, and he was on the ice when his team was in Buffalo for a late season match against the Sabres and McDavid. It was a McDavid draft coming up, so the first overall pick was on the line, and Sabres fans were actually openly cheering for the Coyotes. It was kind of a low point of the McDavid tanking era there. So he knows firsthand, and then Doan is an influential guy. So who knows if this will ever come to fruition, but I thought it was a pretty smart idea, and it's something that's been out there for you know, almost, I guess, 10 years now, but that, you know, continues to kind of hold its weight in terms of it being a nice solution or a nice way to take this whole draft order discussion.
John, part four of the series I thought was the most interesting to me. They were all really great, and I enjoyed, and they were really well written. But the two-forward, three-defenseman configuration, that's something that, you know, I had heard of, you know, several years ago, and you speak to Jack Hahn, who is a video and statistical analyst for the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, and he's considered, you know, one of the innovators in terms of this idea. And, you know, Sheldon Keefe is someone who has said, you know, in previous years that he might consider using two forwards and 3D. And one of the teams that you use to, you know, show that this could work is the Tampa Bay Lightning, kind of Nikita Kucherov playing the role as a defenseman. And what I wanted to ask you about was, what did you learn about this? And do you think if we do see a team, even if it's only for one game or, you know, one shift or one period, is there a team that stands out to you that could benefit? Because I think of teams like the Carolina Hurricanes, who are really deep on defense, or maybe a team like the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, with Seth Jones and, you know, Zach Werenski. Like, is there a team, and I guess the coach would have to match up with that, right? But do you see this, you know, possibly being used, as I said, even if it's only for, you know, a shift or a period or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, right, where you hear, oh, two forwards, three defensemen. You go, whoa, take a step back here. Let's not reinvent the game. But then you actually unpack, like, you know, the actual layers of when you would use this, and it kind of makes sense. So it would only be in certain situations, and those, you know, sort of the parameters there would be you're a little top heavy on your roster, so you're going to overplay your, like, if we just use the Leafs as an example. You would those top four forwards that you have that you're paying half the salary cap to, you play the hell out of them, and then you've got all these young defensemen in sort of the third pairing realm that maybe in the AHL, maybe getting, you know, time as a sixth defenseman, seventh defenseman. They're all on entry level deals, so they're cheap, and they probably should be in the NHL, but they're kind of stuck in a logjam there, you know, towards the bottom of the depth chart. So In this format, you would maybe dress, you know, 10 forwards, 11 forwards, or, you know, along with 7D or 8D. And for your bottom six, you would roll out, you know, these three young guys, for example, Mac Hollowell, Timothy Liljegren, and Rasmus Sandin, along with, you know, a Joe Thornton and a Jimmy Vesey as your fourth line. It's like, you know, when you kind of break it down in that sense, it starts adding up, and you can kind of talk yourself into it, because it does seem like a radical concept on the surface. So it's really like situational based, and that is something that Jack Hahn tried to relay to me when we were discussing it. He's the Marlies coach, and he worked within the Leafs organization for a few years. The main thing you try to get across is that, one, this is something that you're not going to do all the time. Two, it's dependent on, you know, what your salary cap looks like, where you're allocating dollars, and also what type of players you have in your organization. And then also, it's a commentary on the modern defensemen. Like, there are a lot of really strong young defensemen out there who are not able to crack NHL lineups because maybe they're just not a perfect player. They're not ready yet for the big time. But if you played them in shelter minutes for, you know, 10 minutes a game, they would probably do pretty well. Like, for example, Hahn brought up Kalen Addison in Minnesota, pretty offensive defenseman, has, you know, needs some growth in other areas. But if you put him with two other defensemen that are maybe, you know, take care of their end a little bit better, and then some veteran forwards, all of a sudden you've got a guy in your lineup that can be dynamic off the rush. You know, he can play, you know, well deep into the offensive zone. Another guy's Ryan Merkley in San Jose, another young guy with a ton of offensive upside, but just hasn't put it all together. So it's kind of a different way of thinking about, I guess, it's kind of like a market inefficiency where, you know, I highly doubt a team would ever sort of invert the pyramid fully and have a full lineup of two forward 3D configuration. But if you can do it for, you know, the bottom of your lineup with the right pieces, I think it makes sense. And it might leave some offense on the table because, you know, by default, if you have more defensemen on the ice and fewer forwards, you're probably not going to produce as much offense. But you know, if you have these top end forwards anyways, like the Leafs, for example, what do you expect from your bottom six anyways? You expect them to maybe break even. Well, this is a way to break even, and then you maybe win the top six battle 3-1, and there you go, you have a win. So it's a pretty abstract concept. To I guess circle back to your original question, I could maybe see a couple teams trying it out, but it would be certainly an experimental basis and not for, you know, full games. And Sheldon Keith of the Leafs has actually done it at lower levels with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds in the OHL. But he has said, you know, since Hahn came out with this idea that he was not considering it for the upcoming season. But, you know, we've seen coaches before say that they won't do something, and then, oh, a couple months later they do it. So we'll see.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. John is with The Score, and we're talking about their series on rethinking the NHL.
Well, you know, when you're talking about a traditional league like the NHL, it's difficult to get them to break the mold. And you use the word radical in your response to Ezzy's question. So this one, I think, is probably the most radical. Playoff teams picking their opponents. Like, do you ever see that happening? And I thought it was really interesting to read how some other leagues have been able to do it. But do you ever think that the NHL would ever even think about a dog? Even just thinking about it seems radical, let alone even embracing that idea.
No, I know. And yeah, I would say the pick your opponent one was I guess the most out of left field, or one that had the most sort of bells and whistles to it versus just a straightforward idea. There's sort of precedent. So I guess to answer your question, no, I can't imagine the NHL doing it. And, you know, part of the series was to just, you know, think outside the box and not necessarily deep dive on, oh, will the NHL do this or not. But there is precedent in terms of not only in the NHL where they've done the fantasy drafts for the All-Star games, and I realize that's a whole, you know, different ball game in terms of the stakes and, you know, the feel and the tone of the whole operation, but they have done it. They have thought outside the box in that sense. So you could set it up in a similar way where there's some sort of a TV event where the captain of the top team in the NHL goes up to a podium and picks the first round opponent. And you do that for a couple of other teams. So there's that possibility. And also it's been done in lower leagues. So the SPHL, which is one rung below the ECHL, kind of a semi-pro league, for being honest, they've done it before. They did it for 2 years, a few years ago, and apparently to really get a success. Part of the reason why it worked is because, well, one, you know, they got to attract fans in any way. And two, geographically, they were all pretty close, these teams. So it was easier to kind of move around in the first round and pick whichever opponent you wanted. And the whole travel thing is less of a big deal. Whereas in the NHL, you'd probably divide it by Eastern and Western Conference. And then I'd say the most encouraging development in this area of picking your playoff opponent would be the Austrian League actually still does it. They've been doing it for a few years now. I think it's ninth year coming up. And there's been no complaints. They do a TV event. The only real, I guess, pushback is from coaches who don't particularly like it because it adds some bulletin board material for the other team. And I think in general, they just are people who would rather just keep things as they are and focus on the day-to-day versus creating this, this hype around the game. So, yeah, it's really, you know, it's something that's difficult to wrap your head around, but I think crazier things have happened in pro sports, and it would just be a matter of doing it once, right? And then it becomes part of the calendar. And I think part of the reason why I decided to do this series is that the NHL, like I said at the off the top, it thinks maybe a little too small. It's a, you know, if they ever want to, say, increase revenue, if they want to jump over an MLB in terms of the pecking order in the States, I think there needs to be a little more creativity. So whether that's, you know, picking your playoff opponent, I don't know. That, again, that's extreme. It's a little gimmicky. But there are other ways that they can spice things up and maybe get away from being the crusty old league that rarely changes its traditions.
It's a fascinating series of articles. We're going to tweet out a link to them so our audience can read all about it. John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, kudos again on the articles, on the series in general. It's a great read, and congratulations.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on, and best of luck there in Manitoba. I'm thinking of you guys.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it, and happy holidays, and all the best in the holiday season to you and yours. John Mattis from The Score joining us on the line. Take care, John. When we come back, we're going to actually give our opinions on some of these ideas. I love the pick your opponent one. That's my number one favorite
Shocker.
One. I know. You know me, Dave. I like to be a bit of an anarchist every now and then. We'll talk about it next. We want to hear from you, of course. You can send us your comments on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us your comments via text 129090. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
It is now time to see who the winning team is.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
The old traditional draft lottery, that's what that clip was from.
I think you're going to want to hear this.
Wait, wasn't that the heavy ball, though?
That was the heavy ball.
Yeah.
Yes, that
the
was
most
the
anticlimactic moment when that guy, in draft lottery
well,
history.
When
he dropped the Rangers ball?
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't have worked out any better, though. I mean, the fact that he dropped the Rangers ball, had to pick it back up, which was so awkward, and then the Rangers end up winning?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'm not a conspiracy nut, but...
I mean, but I like that people are saying, well, we can't get rid of this drama of the draft lottery in order to, you know, rethink the entire draft order concept.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, the gold plan would do is, you know, following up on the conversation we just had with John Mattis of thescore.com. Welcome back, by the way, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, Bernstein's is there to help you out however you need to be helped during this code red that we're in. Curbside, delivery, whatever you need, just give them a call, bernsteinsdeli.com. All the information is there. They'll go the extra mile to make sure that you have all your deli food that you need. And, of course, in Ezzy's case, your weekly supply of Illegal Curve sandwiches.
Should probably be extra kilometer because we're in Canada.
Yes, fair enough.
Metric system, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you for your accuracy there, Mr. Ginsburg. But, I mean, to the point of the series of these articles and to the point of the, I mean, I've been saying this for a long time, a lot of people have, the NHL just doesn't think different. They're so almost boring and traditional, you know, that why not reinvent the draft order concept? Why not reinvent the playoff opponents, how you pick your playoff opponents? I've been saying this, as a you can attest to this, for years now. You finish first overall, and what's your reward? Your reward is you get one extra home game, and theoretically you're playing against a weaker opponent, but the parity right. in the NHL is so extreme that, you know, maybe the eighth place team is a team that you actually match up poorly against.
Well, and that's,
and you don't want to play against.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I have no problem with so if you haven't, you know, looked at the four-part series or read the four-part series, basically, you know, in simple terms, there's, as you just mentioned, there's rethinking the draft order, there's what if NHL teams pick their opponents, there's should the NHL consider an exception player rule, and then there's the two forward 3D configuration at 5-on-5. So out of those four, you know, ideas, I like all of them, to be honest with you. And, you know, when you're talking about the draft lottery...
Well, the fourth one about I mean, the two forwards 3D, there's nothing precluding that from happening right now except for a coach's will to want to do it.
Right.
And, the other three would require the NHL and the NHLPA and the Board of Governors to sort of decide that they want to overhaul the concept in general.
Well, no, but the thing, you wouldn't really have, I don't think that's what it is. It, like, you would still be lining up like three forwards and 2D. It's using three defensemen. Like, you wouldn't have to change any rules or anything like
that.
You're just using.
I'm saying with that one, you don't have to, it just has to be a coach who wants to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I misunderstood you.
But I'm saying the other ones require, you know, would have to be collectively bargained and they would have to go, all the lawyers would have to get involved and the PA and then the NHL and the Board of Governors and everybody and their dog would have a say on
it.
And where's the fourth one about the two forwards 3D? Well, any coach can just determine that on their own.
Right. And the biggest, you know, roadblock with that is that you usually only dress six defensemen.
Sure.
So even if you dress seven defensemen mm-hmm. and you've got 11 forwards,
yeah.
it's still tough to do that. So you wouldn't see, I think, a team do that for an entire game. You'd only see them do that maybe on a power play or maybe just a certain group of players, right? But going back to what you were asking about the draft lottery, Drew, I would have no problem going back to the way it used to be when if a team finished last, they got the first overall pick, right? So, like, that's going back even further to the old school way because...
Sure. Well, that's how they do it in the NFL still. Well, the worst team gets the first overall pick.
And to me, I would rather have that than the draft lottery because, let's be honest, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, the U.S. television deal coming up, if you, going back to, you know, playoff teams picking their opponents, you know, back in 2019, you wonder, you know, would Tampa Bay have picked Columbus?
They never would have.
I don't think they would have.
Tampa Bay succeeded all year long. They were the best team in the NHL by a country mile. And what's their reward? Their reward is they play against a team in Columbus that's well coached, that has good goaltending, and that matched up well against what Tampa Bay wanted to do.
And I think the argument that was made in the article was that Tampa Bay could have picked Toronto.
Yeah.
Right? And Toronto, we know, is, you know, really struggled to get out of the first round, right? So, and we know that Columbus swept Tampa Bay, but yeah, the draft lottery is an interesting one because, you know, it, and the article brings this up, you know, how would you, you know, consider trading draft picks? You know, if it's possible that you're going to get the first overall draft pick, would that change, you know, the ability for you to have that draft pick to be traded? But, you know, I have no problem with the idea because I think the draft lottery, you know, we know is a little bit of a mockery, right? Like Edmonton getting all of those first overall picks.
It's not exciting. There's nothing about the draft lotteries that's so pure and so fundamental to the game of hockey that it can't be rethought reconsidered.
At the end of the day, the fact that the Detroit Red Wings, who were the worst team in the NHL,
exactly.
didn't get the number one pick is embarrassing.
They didn't get the number two or number three pick either.
Right. But
right? They got four.
And the fact is that the New York Rangers, who already have an abundance of wealth of, of prospects, they're... They qualified
for the return to play.
I said at the time that I think that this probably puts them in line to be, given their goaltending prospects, I think this puts them in line to be a Stanley Cup contender within, and potentially win a Stanley Cup within 5 years.
Well, 5 years is, I think.
I think they've got that, they've got a nice window though. And I'm just saying that to me, if you're the Detroit Red Wings, and if you're the Detroit Red Wings fans, and people go, oh, well, don't suck. Well, you know, the fact is that the Red Wings didn't suck for 25 years. The Red Wings, you know, but you eventually pay for that. Mm-hmm. You eventually pay for the greatness that you have. Look, the Chicago Blackhawks, same. The LA Kings, the same. So the fact is that to not allow a team to get their leg, you know, that helping hand up with a number one overall pick after having the season they did, and to Ezzie's point, not even getting the second and third pick, I mean, it's insane because while they have the, quote, best chance, they didn't because if you tabulated all the percentages of all the other,
they had the best individual team chance.
But not collectively. So to me, that is a flaw in the current draft lottery system. And sure, you get a night of television out of it as opposed to it being predetermined based on the standings. But again, it's not about like, you know, like it's great that you get a boost for one night. Who cares?
But imagine if, so the Red Wings are eliminated at game 60 last year.
That's right.
So instead of, you know, them having these next 22 games of utter meaninglessness, they could get 22 games where they're trying to collect as many points as possible so that they can, so that they could then win the gold plan and win the first overall pick that way. It gives you meaning to all 82 games, even if your team is not a very good team, as opposed to how it currently is where, you know, once you're eliminated, well, really, what are you playing for? You're just playing out the string in front of more and more empty seats. And who does that benefit?
John Mattis mentions this in the article. In sports nowadays, whether you're talking about hockey, basketball, football, it doesn't matter. You want to believe that any team can beat the other team on any given night or any given afternoon, right? And watching the Detroit Red Wings, I mean, we watched them here in Winnipeg and obviously play other teams, but they were a bad team.
Right.
Like, that reminded me of, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, remember when Colorado had that 48-point season?
Sure.
I mean, Detroit was really bad. And Stevie Yzerman and the Red Wings coaching staff, like, they knew they weren't going to be good last year, but I think they didn't think they were going to be that bad.
But if they win game 70, you know, if the gold plan is in existence and they win game 70...
They have something to play for. That's the key thing here. I think it's less about, you know, the draft lottery and more about making the last, you know, 15 or 20 games of the season really interesting for fans.
It keeps the fans engaged. It keeps the players engaged even more. I mean, at game 78, instead of the fans saying, oh, shoot, we won this game, they say, hey,
which
we won.
Which is embarrassing.
Which is embarrassing to the point of that game between the Coyotes and the Sabres a few years ago for the in the McDavid sweepstakes. Instead of fans saying, oh, I can't believe we won this game. Why did we win this game? No. We suck so much. You know, they win game 78. They win game 78 instead. Go ahead, Dave. Last word to you.
Well, I was just going to say, I got a tweet from someone talking about, we're talking about the pick your opponent idea, and it was Rob Hawley, and he said, hi, Dave. Pick your opponent would work when NHL goes to 32 teams, have a balanced schedule on ranked teams 1 to 16 for playoffs, then geography would weigh heavy for pick your opponent. So that's an interesting
idea. Yeah, no, I like that. And I just wanted to, you know, mention one thing, you know, to Drew's point there. The best part of, the way I look at this, guys, and I'm sure you looked at, you know, this article the same way. If you earn the first overall pick, that's a lot better than just being given the first overall pick because you're a bad hockey team.
Yeah.
So that's what I like about it, right? Like, and, you know, who knows? Maybe this will happen one day. We don't expect it to happen anytime soon. But if you can have a team...
To have any faith in the NHL to do anything that's not the most traditional, boring, conservative, you know, imaginable idea, there's no reason to believe that's ever going to happen.
I do think, though, that if you have different leadership, then things could change.
Sure.
And I'm not saying Gary Bettman's going anywhere, but, I mean, Gary Bettman's not going to be commissioner forever.
Well, again, but Gary Bettman, remember, as commissioner, he just takes his marching orders from the owner. So there would have to be a groundswell of support from ownership to start to begin to think this way, and you know, there's no evidence that any of these owners are what I'll describe as revolutionary thinkers when it comes to the fundamental structure of the game of hockey. When we come back, we'll talk about the return to play. Hopefully a month from now, we might get underway with puck drop of the 2021 season. We'll talk about the latest news. We'll talk about realignment, things of that nature. Maybe we're going to open up the Bodog inbox as well. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.